for me, there's three options for McGregor. Either it's an immediate rematch, an immediate trilogy fight. But if you do that, then he has to vacate the featherweight title. Option two is you go down, you have a rematch with Jose Aldo, unify the belts. That first fight was, for a lot of people, that first fight was just, it was an outlier. And Jose Aldo will do much better and prove that he's the best featherweight of all time if they were to fight again. So that's a very interesting rematch. Conor McGregor definitely doesn't want to cut weight to get back down to 145. That's very tough for him, but he's never missed weight there, so we won't make that as an excuse. And then option three, and I'm not a huge fan of this. I mean, stylistically, it would be amazing, but is you have Conor McGregor fight for the lightweight title. You have him fight Eddie Alvarez, the new champion, and, you know, the fact that they haven't lined Eddie Alvarez up with any opponents yet leads me to believe that's something the UFC is really considering. Because hypothetically, if Conor McGregor were to beat Eddie Alvarez at lightweight, which is something he's very capable of doing, his style matches up very well with an Eddie Alvarez. If he wins, he's the featherweight champion, then he becomes a lightweight champion, and then you have the trilogy match for the lightweight title, easily the biggest fight in UFC history. That's also an option. So it'll, with Conor McGregor, I believe we'll either see a rematch with Jose Aldo. He'll fight for the lightweight belt against Eddie Alvarez later this year, or they'll just do an immediate rematch. They don't want to risk one of the fighters losing. They'll make their money immediately, and we'll see part three. So I would wager that one of those three options is what we're going to see. I would like to see him rematch with Jose Aldo just because the first fight, it was brilliant. It was a perfect punch. Maybe it was the most shocking moment in UFC history for me when he knocked out Aldo. But I want to see. I feel like the fans were cheated out of a great fight.
Right.
We saw a great moment, but we were cheated out of a great fight because that moment was so good. So I personally, if I had to vote, I'd vote for a McGregor-Aldo rematch later this year.
That was Mike Johnston of Sportsnet.ca looking back on UFC 202 a little earlier today. Heck of a fight. It really was a fun card, and the main event lived up to the hype as Conor McGregor evens up his score with Nate Diaz, one win apiece. There will be a rubber match. There will be a trilogy. We just don't know when the finale of that trilogy will eventually take place. So Mike joined us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Satisfy your craving for a flame-grilled burger with fresh-cut fries. Visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Avenue Southeast, and Stony Trail. We've got a rather familiar voice on tap to talk some flames around the corner and to look back on what was a really cool weekend in the city of Calgary when it comes to the sport of hockey. That is next as the big show continues. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave, 9206 McLeod Trail South. Online at comedycave.com. Talking Calgary sports in the afternoon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
And for the first time today, that splitter actually is accurate because the other half of this program joins us right now. On the program, Rob Kerr, busy tiling.
Yes.
How goes it?
Well, look, I'm not going to put my services out there for people to hire me, but I'm pretty proud of it so far. A little bit more tomorrow, and then I let her set, and then I can start grouting. So we're making some progress. We're making some progress.
You have spent zero of your vacation actually vacationing because right now
yes.
You're doing housework. Last
yes.
week you're doing housework and
yes.
Planning for what just transpired over the weekend because now in the books, the fifth annual Sport Check Calgary Flames Development Camp. We're going to talk some Flames a little bit later on. But
sure.
5 years in the books. Just tell me about the weekend.
It was a great weekend, Pat. It was made by the volunteers like yourself, like Will. Derek came. I think we had 80 kids and probably close to 60 volunteers. So we had another incredible weekend up at SAIT, and we want to thank SAIT Athletics and SAIT Trojans for making the facilities available to us. And then I'll tell you what, there's nothing better than I guess the feeling that you've accomplished something or done something when we were able to have 4 or 5, I think it was 5 actually, people had gone through, kids who had gone through the program in the past, like way back at the start, and in a couple cases they went through a couple years, and then this year came back and acted as volunteers and mentors for the kids. So that was, I got to tell you, that was a pretty cool thing for me to watch those kids come back and kind of give it full circle, having been there in the past. And you know, we make no illusions, as you know, I'm preaching to the choir here. We're in 2 days, we're not going to make a huge impact on their life on the ice, but I think where we made some really big strides is certainly in, you know, helping these kids get exposed to teamwork and leadership and respect. And it's just so gratifying to be part of something that, you know, the community's kind of rallied around and our guys have rallied around, and I just kind of go with you guys and we make it work. And yeah, it's awesome. And then I think people need to know about the contributions of, you know, a couple of great, you know, Calgary entities. One's the Flames. I mean, the Flames help us out with so much. They do a lot of our printing for our signs and our lanyards and everything. They provided Glenn Gullitson. You hosted that yesterday. Glenn Gullitson, the coach of the Flames, came in and talked to the kids and the parents. They provided Hunter Shinkarik, who came in, and Hunter was awesome. Hunter was as good a young hockey player around kids that I've ever seen. The big key always is never to look down on a kid. It's kind of get down to his eye level and deal with him, and I think Hunter did that amazingly well. And, you know, Harvey the Hound was part of our big game experience, and so that made it special. And then, Pat, you know, Sportcheck, they've been on board for 3 years, and every year it's what else can we do? And I'm a big proponent of safety and big proponent that every kid should have a brand new helmet every year, because that's their most important piece of equipment. And the kids that we have come to the camp through no fault of their own don't necessarily come from the most affluent backgrounds. So, you know, the fact that Sportcheck made each kid gave each kid a brand new helmet, and then yesterday gave them a $50 gift card and a pair of tickets to see the Flames and the Carolina Hurricanes, was amazing. And the smiles on those kids' faces, none of which are high-level players. They're all kind of entry-level house league players and, you know, never going to get to go to a camp. It was pretty amazing. It was pretty awesome. So really proud of everybody involved and really proud of what we've been able to do in 5 years. And although last week there were times where I thought, well, this will be the fifth and final, apparently we're going to do a sixth annual. So
nice.
So again, thanks to you and thanks to all the volunteers. And you know, a special shout out to Mike Civic, who came out. Not only did he talk to the kids about officiating and respect, but he lines the game, which I thought was kind of, lines both games, which I thought was kind of cool for the kids. Randy Chevrier, our pal, came out for a bit. Trying to think of who all. I mean, it was Kristen Odlin from the Herald. She taught yoga. And like I say, we have so many great volunteers, and that, the kids are awesome, but the volunteers, Pat, as you know, are the difference in that. I think you can run a hockey school pretty bare bones, but we get it down to, you know, two kids per volunteer somewhere around there, and we're able to give a little bit extra attention. And I think at the end of the day, the kids just dig that. So yeah, pretty proud of it. Thanks, bud.
I remember year one was before Sportcheck and the Flames had gotten on board. It was just the Control F camp, and you know, you're always, because you're running it, you're always running around with your hair on fire. But
that's correct. In
year one, I mean, it was like a full on blaze. It was kind of cool to see how, because I was only able to take part in half of it this year, but it was just cool to see, hey, you know, you're there for year one and kind of how it started and from very modest beginnings, and it's still very modest, and I think we don't, but it certainly has come a long way. And 5 years, that's a pretty significant investment.
If you told me, you know, the goal from year one, let's do it once and see it and see if it works. And, you know, we got great partners and heroes in Football Hockey Link and Hockey Calgary, the Even Strength Program. And, you know, they do a lot. And like you say, my hair is a little less on fire, but still, you know, the big thing is to give these kids the best way to describe. Hunter Shinkarik and I were kind of talking about it. It's kind of cool. I don't know if you remember this, but during the lockout of 2004-05, the station did a promotion with Cardell Holmes called Cardell Play Like the Pros.
Yes.
And they used to do up jerseys, rig fancy jerseys, and then Peter Marr and I would go and broadcast the games, just tape them, and they'd get everybody get a DVD, and it was, you know, a bunch of peewee teams and everything. Well, Hunter played in one of those. So we were kind of talking about that yesterday and how cool that was for him. And, you know, at the end of the day, all this is about, you know, inspiring some kids and giving them a memory that they'll always remember and, you know, that they get that everybody else gets. And you know, we're able to do that. So, yeah, no, it's pretty cool. Like, it's the best part of the job. And, you know, we got a lot of people that are really, you know, diehards into it. We got some great volunteers that come every year and want to be part of it. And that's the best. Again, that's the best part. Is it's I don't have to sit there and lecture anybody or anything like that. Everybody's fired up. Everybody's ready to go. Everybody's bought in. And it's just, you know, again, we were so fortunate because we play in the sandbox, right? You know, we get to talk about sports all the time, and you know, it's far from curing cancer or you know, putting a man on the moon, but you know, getting together as a group, you know, like there's no political boundaries or whatever. I mean, frickin' Jermaine Franklin from TSN is one of our best volunteers. The kids dig him, and he's so good with the kids. And, you know, QR's Peter Watts didn't come this year, but normally comes. He's my, you know, couldn't come this year, but wanted to, and will always be there when we need him. And we just cross boundaries, and we do it as a community, and I'm really proud of it. And I think it's very much, Pat, a Calgary thing. I'm not sure that this flies everywhere else. I think it's just kind of the spirit of this city, and I think everybody buys in, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. So the now number five in the books with the Sport Check Calgary Flames Development Camp. And yeah, I think it's important that you recognize what the Flames Foundation has done and what Sport Check has done in 3 years of being on board, because that is quite the commitment. The helmet,
absolutely,
a pair of regular season tickets, and a $50 gift card for every kid in the camp. That is
I'll throw one more in there, Pat, that I should have mentioned before. They also provide, one of their volunteers is Stephen McLean, who's one of the head equipment people for FGL for Sport Check, and he comes in and he sharpens skates, and then he gives a hockey equipment talk in the afternoon, and we have some volunteers from the State Trojans hockey program, and those guys were saying they sat in there and they said he did such an amazing job. They're hockey players. One guy played in the Ontario Hockey League, Ty Bilkey. Another guy played in the AJHL, and those guys were saying, look, he taught me some stuff I didn't know. And we assume all the time that everybody knows everything about the game.
Yeah.
And you know, they step up, and just think about that, eh, Pat? Like, you know, at least there's some great Hockey Canada camps, and there's some pro camps here, but you know, you're a 12-year-old kid, and you know, you play, you know, a lower division, and you get to go to this camp, and a guy says, give me your skates and I'll sharpen them. You don't have to worry, you don't have to send them with mom. That's how the pros get it done. It's just those little things, man, that just push it over the top.
Rob Kerr with us as we continue on the Big Show. Now, neither you nor I were able to be on the radio on Friday when some rather you were getting prepped for day one.
You were traveling.
Party.
Yes.
So I was also unable to be there. But some fairly significant Calgary Flames news happened.
Yeah.
They signed Sean Monahan to a 7-year contract extension. It ends up being just a little bit more. Remember, it was day one of Stampede where you and I were sitting on the grounds, and first Scheifele, and then like 10 minutes later, MacKinnon signed their long-term extensions. And that was when we got the market. With Barkov, with Scheifele, and with MacKinnon, you kind of got your market for Monahan. And in the end, despite it lasting until August 19th, until the deal got done, that's where the contract falls right in. A little bit more than MacKinnon's for the same amount of time. Kind of exactly what we thought it was going to be.
So what do you want to do? Do you want to dig on it, or do we just sit here and go, everybody's happy, the player's happy, the team's happy, we'll just leave it alone? Because there has to be, does there not, some sort of reason why it didn't happen.
Well,
right,
here's how I understand the two kind of from what I've been told, from what I've been able to garner, the reasons why it maybe lasted a little bit longer than it should have. Because you're right. I mean, August 19th for something that looked like it was pretty well handled in July, it seems a little strange. So for me, it was, first of all, I think they were trying to figure out if it was going to be 7 or 8 years and how much more it was going to cost to get him to go the extra year. And number two, I think Monahan was waiting for Gaudreau, and I think they were waiting to see if they could leverage what Gaudreau got to maybe further their cause. But when you kind of get the feel that, okay, well, the market's set by other contracts, and it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of movement on the Gaudreau side right now, and it might not get signed until September or something like that, we might as well just sign now. So that's kind of the reasons that I point to as to why maybe it took longer than we thought it would.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair, but it's also part of negotiation. I wouldn't look at it and go, well, you know, here we go. This is, you know, kind of like Mike Camilleri and the LA Kings when they went through arbitration. Boy, there's something simmering there, and, you know, a year later the player gets traded, or Ryan O'Reilly in the offer sheet in Colorado.
Right.
No, it's not that. That's not it at all. That's not what we're talking about here, right? You know, so, I mean, go back to those other deals. It falls in line with that. The player's happy to be here. What was the quote? I would have signed a 20-year deal. Well, okay, could have gone to 8. Not a big deal. I mean, you buy a couple years of free agency. To me, You know, again, I'm not trying to cause trouble where trouble doesn't exist. But we're talking about a player that, you know, still has a little bit of growing up to do. We saw that last year. Yep. He and the other kid and Boma all sat out a game, and that happens. Okay, fair enough. You know, little sluggish start, picked up. We know he can score. His big challenge for me, Pat, is now becoming, you know, a leader on this team, more of a, you know, more of a vocal leader, if that's, you know, possible for him, because he's not necessarily a vocal guy. But the other part for me is, can he become a dominant faceoff man? And by dominant, I'm not necessarily meaning, does he need to be Patrice Bergeron and lead the league at over 60%, but is this a guy that can tip up towards 55% in the faceoff circle? Because as you know and I know, boy, you have to go back to Stefan Yell and Damon Lanko when this team was a kind of an effective team in terms of winning draws. And while that seems like a little thing, it's part of the complete package conversation. He can score. We know that. He can set pucks up. Absolutely. He's got great chemistry with Johnny Gaudreau. You can now begin to use him on penalty kill. But Pat, to me, the one thing I'm going to be watching this year is whether this kid, well, not whether, because I think he can, mm-hmm. but when does this kid take that next step in terms of being able to go out and win those big draws consistently?
Well, and it's a good point, because for me, the big thing, I think he's going to be this team's number one center. I think that he yep. is, but one thing that sets players apart in terms of being a number one center or not is whether or not you are a dominant faceoff guy. And I think when you start looking at players like Patrice Bergeron and Sidney Crosby and Claude yep. Giroux and Ryan O'Reilly, Anze Kopitar, Jonathan Toews, Ryan Kesler, Ryan Getzlaf, all these players, Nicklas Backstrom, John Tavares, they're all well above 50% in the faceoff, right. Don. And it's not the only thing that makes you a great two-way center, but it's a big part of what makes you become a true number one center in this league, that you can have faith in every single situation. Winning that draw is important. So yeah, I think his all-round game, we know he can score. In the offense, you know, he's a yep. two-time 60-point scorer, one-time 30-goal scorer. Offense is fine, and I think that's a nice base to work on, but it's all about the all-round game now and how it continues to progress.
But therein lies the rub, right? Because of all the attributes that a player can have, maybe one of the most difficult to do, just based on physiology, I think, more than anything, is to come in at 18 and be a dominant center in terms of winning draws.
Yeah.
You can come in, you can be, you know, guys have come into this league and set it on fire offensively. Guys have come into this league and been really good on the power play and things like that. Very rarely does a guy come in his first couple of years and become a dominant faceoff man. That's a rarity. So there's nothing wrong with him. It's not that there's a problem or an issue there. To me, that's just the thing worth watching now.
Yeah.
That's the statistic. That's the number. You know, the other thing is, like anything else on this team, and you probably can speak to it better than I can, but it's got to start, not got to start, but he's got to, again, be a positive possession guy. He's got to be a guy that drives possession, right? Because that's where this team needs to go. Needs to become better in the faceoff circle, mm-hmm. and it needs to drive possession.
Yep, it's true. And I think that he has taken strides in that direction, but still the guy on this team in the position who does that best is Michael Backlund. And,
yeah.
and there's a great affinity for Michael Backlund in the city, but you know, Sean Monahan is now being paid. Michael Backlund's paid like a second, third line center. Sean Monahan's right. now being paid like a number one center. So the expectations are fairly well set going forward. And then, okay, now you know what we know what you're getting paid. So now you have
that's
to go
right.
out and perform as such. And
absolutely.
Know, that's
absolutely
not all that different to what Johnny Gaudreau is going to end up having to face. And yet, you know, that one sure is strange.
I think it's going to be, no, but I disagree with that. I think it is going to be different because I think we're talking about the potential now for a contract that isn't necessarily comparable, right? You know, who are we comparing him to? I know a lot of people wanted to compare him, or some people wanted to compare him earlier in the summer to Forsberg and things like that. I don't think that's the deal anymore. I don't think it's even Tarasenko. So if we're talking about a guy that's, you know, going to demand big dollars, I think there's going to be a much greater expectation on him to come out and produce right away offensively. Nobody's going to care whether or not he can win draws, but they are going to worry about, because the power play is going to work through him. Mm-hmm. Is the power play going to be better? Is he going to be a point-of-game guy? Can he score at home or on the road now? You know, all of these little bugaboos. I think it's different, Pat, when you fall in line, and I think Monahan fell in line, right? Contract-wise? Fell in line. That's what everybody else is doing. He was right around the rest of the Joneses. He was right around the rest of the young centermen who produce points, you know, in the league. Right now, Goudreau's contract, at least seemingly to me, is somewhere out there in the ether. Who are we comparing him to? I think the expectations are going to be much higher on Goudreau when he signs.
It's actually not like I never quite thought of it that way. In that, you know, he probably, like, because he's already been a top 10 scorer, and he's going to be very quickly one of the higher paid forwards in the National Hockey League, especially if he ends up signing a long term deal with the Calgary Flames. So, you know, I've never quite thought of it quite that way about how the expectations might be even higher on him.
Oh, I don't. But see, that's kind of what I think is, you know, if Monahan right now, what he's getting paid, if he comes out and he gets 24 goals and 55 points, but the team wins, no problem, right?
Because he's a center iceman, and we can talk about the other stuff, right?
Exactly. Say whatever. What do you think? What are we thinking? North of 8? Round 9? I don't know. Long-term deal? Maybe. He better not be falling out of the top 10 in scoring, Pat. If he signs that, right? Am I wrong?
No. And that's just it. Like I've never, like, in terms of expectations, I hadn't really quite thought of it as such. But I mean, when you've already been a top 10 scorer in year two, and you're going to get paid like a perennial top 10 scorer, well, if you're going to have a huge step back, or if you're going to be a 60 point player, all of a sudden the negative spotlight is going to get turned on you a whole lot quicker than it might with other players. So
don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you put it that way. And I wonder if, because there isn't, Tarasenko's an interesting comparison, and I guess Forsberg's an interesting comparison, but Gaudreau in a lot of ways is kind of in a different class of his own. There's not necessarily a clear comparison for him, and I wonder if that is part of why this negotiation has dragged on as long as it has. And
I think so.
Because where do you go with it? Like, the Flames probably have their comparables, but his group probably says, well, wait a second, like, who's done what Gaudreau's done? These are our comparables.
Yep. No, that's, you know, again, I don't, all due respect to Philip Forsberg, and I like Philip Forsberg as a hockey player, I don't think he's the same, and I don't think he's the same as Tarasenko. I think Tarasenko is more of a pure finisher. Gaudreau, still, to me, he's more, again, here we go back, maybe it's size, maybe it's, he's more like Patrick Kane. You can do a little bit of everything, but it's going to flow through him. Like, the offense on this power, this is his power play. If he signs here for 8 years, this is his power play. I find it hard to believe, unless they get, you know, some sort of stud defenseman coming through, that it's going to be any different than everything flows through him. So then, and that's fine. And you and I have had this conversation. Pay him. I have no problem paying him, and I have no problem locking him up. But expectation comes with that. Now, is there any chance in what anything you're hearing, because I certainly am not plugged into it, I haven't paid too much attention, or I haven't even bothered, because I think it'll happen when it happens. But let me ask you this. Is there any sense that the team here might be looking and going, are we sure? Are we sure we want to give a sub-6-foot player who's had one big or two big years, who's had 2 years in the National Hockey League, is there any doubts in anybody's mind anymore? Is that what's holding this up?
That would not be the first place I would go. And I say that mainly because Brad Treliving has said that, you know, they want to go long term. He said that, you know, we want to go long term, but maybe the player doesn't. And that was about, I would say, about a month ago when he said that, if not longer. And and since that time, it's resonated more and more with me. And that's, okay, so he says we want to go long term, and that's kind of, in his own words, said, you know, the team would probably make sense for long term, but the player, maybe they're looking at something a little bit different. I wonder if that's not the biggest holdup right now, is if the Gaudreau camp is saying, maybe we'll go a little bit shorter and see if we can't get a bigger payoff in the end, and we're not as keen to sign a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what you'd call the conventional thinking in this, right? I mean, if they saw what happened this summer. We had the one respite of common sense in the marketplace, but if they took Johnny Gaudreau, you know, at 27 or 28 to free agency 5 years down the road, what are we talking about? A $15 million deal? Probably not. Probably around 12, but it's certainly going to be a double-digit deal, and I don't think he's going to get a double-digit deal right now in terms of yearly, right? But they'd be silly not to think that they couldn't.
Exactly.
In 4 or 5 years.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the big headbutting points right now. And I guess
And you know, here's the thing. And I'm all for a good debate, and it's not the end of the world. But I heard you and Derek talk about this last week.
Yeah.
Okay, if you don't get to me, if he ain't here for longer than 4 years, clock's ticking.
Absolutely.
The clock is ticking.
If you're not going, like if you're Brad Treliving, you have to almost have it like tattooed on yourself that, okay, if we can only sign him for 4 years, you have to be prepared to trade him at some point if there's any chance you lose him for nothing.
Yep. That's how I see it. And I don't like that. That's to me not a positive contract or conversation to be having, right? You know, I think there's other teams and other organizations that have gone through that with their young kids. Like, well, you know, are they going to be able to keep him? Does he want to stay? All those sort of things. And those are nuisances. I mean, smaller, you know, in terms of interest, probably smaller interest in Denver. But look how ugly that last couple of years with Ryan O'Reilly was. That was just ugly. That's not fun. It's not healthy. It's not good for anybody, right?
Yep.
I'm just trying to think of, you know, of the Stanley Cup teams we've seen recently. Who's kind of having those conversations? They really don't, right? They've got bought in long term. If anything, their problem is they've locked up some of the, you know, Browns locked up too long in L.A. You know, Seabrook might be too long in Chicago. But they're, you know, those teams aren't sitting there going, well, we better win it soon because, you know, Bowman's got to trade one of these guys right away. That's just not positive to me. Yeah. And I hate to be that guy because who knows what the deal is going to be. But I heard you guys talking about it last week. And, you know, I just, you know, you hate to hear the narrative hijacked. Like, the narrative should be about any team. It's about winning a championship and building to a championship. But in this day and age, you don't get it done. The clock's ticking. Maybe the first half year, maybe the first season. But after that, then it's going to be phone calls about when and columns written about when. And that's the reality of it.
Yeah. And one of the other things that we talked about on Thursday was, like, can you see this being a holdout situation? I still think he's going to sign. I do. But the closer, like, here we are. It's August 22nd. So yeah, like, I can't close my eyes and be blind and say, no, there's no chance that he will hold out through training camp, because the more this drags on, the more realistic a possibility that becomes too. Again, if I'm a betting man, I still think he's there to start training camp and the contract's, whatever it looks like, the contract is signed. But closer it gets, the more of a potential it's Torrey Krug or it's Drew Doughty or whatever it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
We've seen it happen before.
Yeah, but I, you know, as a fan, and I, you know, maybe I'm the wrong guy to speak for fans, but I'll run it by you. As a fan, I'd be less concerned about a holdout and more concerned about a short-term deal.
Agreed. I mean, I think the long, I think that if he were to hold out for 10 days and get a long-term deal and not hold off and get a four-year deal, I'd rather the former than the latter.
And here's the stupid thing. If you're ever going to hold out, this is the year, right?
With a World Cup of hockey going on?
He's going to play.
Yeah.
He's going to play. It's not like he's going to go home and skate with his high school team. He's going to play.
Yep.
You know, so he will potentially come in. You know, that's the old adage about, I think, Doughty and even a little bit about PK and some of them. I mean, PK's went right up to the start of the season, but he had no preseason. There's always that, well, they're never quite the same. It takes half a year. That you wouldn't have with this kid, right?
Yeah, he's playing high-level hockey.
He's playing high-level hockey, right?
Well, that's our summertime Flames conversation for the year. Because you're back next week and I'm gone.
I'm back next week. Then all hell breaks loose.
Exactly.
Oh, they'll never be the same again.
Yes, bashing your way through the afternoon.
I'll bash my way through the afternoon. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to win with class. Because there's a conspiracy against me.
Look it. Learn how to win with some class, will ya?
Win with some class. That's my new motto, Pat. That's next year's camp motto. Win with some class.
All while being fined $75,000. So,
yeah.
Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Kettle, pot, here, go.
Enjoy tiling. We'll see you soon.
I am. I think I might actually have it done. I might be grouting by Thursday.
25 minutes. Not bad. That's pretty short.
Thank you.
Bye, buddy.
Thank you. All right, see you, pal. Thanks for it. And again, thank you for helping yesterday. It means a lot to me, pal.
Anytime.
It means a lot to me.
Good work. Good work again.
All right, buddy.
Rob Kerr, the other part of the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan, thought, you know what? Did the camp yesterday and Saturday, the fifth annual Calgary Flames and Sport Check Development Camp. It went off really, really well at SAIT. So many Calgary media involved volunteer-wise, other volunteers. Like, the volunteers are, it's amazing how many people volunteer for the two-day event. And, but you know what? He wouldn't do it himself. He wouldn't pat himself on the back. So, okay, well, I'll make him get patted on the back. We're not going to be able to talk about the Monahan contract because neither of us worked on Friday, so might as well do it today. Big Show is brought to you by the Comedy Cave, whereas as Jack has told Rob many times, as Jack has told me many times, the most important thing about the Comedy Cave is you're never paying more than $10 for admission. I keep telling you, it's Calgary's best entertainment dollar in the city. It's true. Like, it doesn't matter what day of the week, other than Monday when they're not open. It doesn't matter what day of the week, late show on Friday, Saturday night show, you're paying $10 every single time. Tomorrow's BOGO, so you're paying less than $10, but you're never paying more. ComedyCave.com or call 403-287-1120. Chris Gordon is your featured performer this week. Well, we all thought the Rio Games were going to be a disaster. From afar, it seemed like they were pretty darn successful. What about a gentleman who was there? Because someone who actually was able to observe the Rio Games will give us his rap next on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave, 9206 McLeod Trail South. Online at ComedyCave.com. Talking Calgary sports in the afternoon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The 2016 Rio Games are all wrapped up. They're all done. 17 days in the books, 22 medals for Canada, their best Olympic haul since 1996. But going into these Olympics, it was totally unknown how Canada would perform. And it was totally unknown if this was going to be a disaster or not. So many people were predicting doom and gloom, and this was going to be a horrible Olympics. Well, when it's all said and done from afar anyway, it sure didn't seem like that was the case. But I wasn't there. Arash Benetti was, Sportsnet in Rio, and Arash joined us a little earlier today. And I asked him first thing, straight up, did the good in Rio outweigh the bad?
And then some, Pat. And then some. I mean, I truthfully don't know where the bad would enter the conversation. Okay, the diving pool turned green one day. Well, it didn't snow in Whistler either. And didn't the Zamboni break down at the curling rink too? I mean, these things happen. Okay, the pH levels were awry. So they drained the pool and then put it back in. It was fine. And, oh yeah, there were some athletes who were robbed at gunpoint and mugged, except that was somebody's peroxide in their hair leaking into their brain, apparently. He was a smug, American, entitled douchebag who lived up to every stereotype. Listen, guys, coming into these Olympics, what did we hear? There was going to be a mosquito-borne virus that was going to infect everybody, that the venues weren't ready, that there were going to be murders all over the place. And not only did the events go off without a hitch, but I barely saw a fly my 3 weeks here. And it couldn't have gone over better with great stories. So Brazil knocked out of the park, mission accomplished for the organizing committee, for the people of this country, for the first Olympics to ever be held on this continent. They did a wonderful job.
Tell me a little bit more about the actual experience in Rio, because it was watching Bob Costas and his extra yesterday on NBC and listening to a lot of the stuff on CBC and just hearing different things and reading different things on Twitter. Like, everybody raved about the hospitality and the actual people of Rio de Janeiro. With all that talk that I've read, like, were your experiences very similar to that?
Yeah, I mean, people were helpful. People wanted this. I mean, it's a significant deal. The entire world was watching, and they wanted you to appreciate, understand, and get a taste of the flavor and the culture and the food and the dance and the rest of it. And it had all of that. You know, the actual events were held out in a bubble, you know, 90 minutes outside of the heart of Copacabana. But it was down there in Copacabana where the beach volleyball was held after midnight. And, you know, they really wanted you to get a taste and understand who and what they are. Listen, you can go anywhere. I live in Toronto, guys. Okay? I can paint you a picture of what downtown Toronto is. I can paint you a picture of what suburban Mississauga is. And I can paint you a picture of what Jane and Finch area is, where Rob Ford used to hang out when he wanted to go see his friends to get his fix. Okay, so I can paint a number of different pictures for you of civilized Toronto, our country's big city. And the same thing could be done here. We didn't go hang out in the favelas, but why would we? You know, so this was a real important matter of pride for the people here. And that's what I think really makes this a satisfying experience for the host nation, is that a lot of people will leave here And even those who had railed on this place for 18 months, who sheepishly have to go home and say, yeah, they did good. They did real good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's really interesting, because Rio is a top 10 metropolitan center in the world in terms of population. It's a world city. It's one of the most recognizable cities in the world. Everybody knows where Rio is. Everybody knows the Christ the Redeemer and knows where it's situated with Copacabana Beach and so on and so forth. Like it is one of the most famous cities in the world. And here is the world's biggest event going on in its city. I'm just curious of the buzz of having a world famous city hosting a world famous event like the Olympics.
Well, they've hosted two of the biggest events.
I guess the World Cup was a year and a half ago. Yeah.
Right. So been there, done that, have the t-shirt, check mark. Right. And it's all part of it. And quite honestly, for a country in real economic despair, this could not have gone over better in terms of the tourist dollars that came in for both of those events. Now, the unfortunate part of this, Pat, is that because of the worry of Zika and the rest, there were many potential visitors and tourists and family members and friends who otherwise would have come who stayed away, which in large part, the Olympics are half the people in the venues are locals and the other half come from afar, who are family members, friends, supporters of these athletes who've been there for the journey. And a lot were really apprehensive about coming because of everything they heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the unfortunate part of all this, is that so many stayed away because of everything that had, the 18-month lead-up into this. For those that did come, nobody has a bad thing to say, except maybe four dummy swimmers from the United States.
Arash Vidani's with us from Rio. He leaves tomorrow. The Olympics have wrapped up with the closing ceremonies last night on the Big Show. Kelly?
Arash, I was going to just send you a text or an email just saying, man, the stuff you did, despite obviously Sportsnet wasn't a rights holder, but the access you got and the story you told was really, really cool. And I know it's been running on Sportsnet here today, and I imagine tonight a little bit, but for the folks that don't know, and I'm not a TV guy, but you did, there's a bit of a piece where you kind of narrated a little bit. Tell us how that came about and how you put it together, because folks better watch it. It is really, really cool.
No, I appreciate that. We basically put together a little 8-minute montage on the 3 weeks that were, and part of it was on Rio, the city, and everything here. Part of it was on the legends, Usain Bolt and Michael Phelps, because I think the legacy of these games and how we'll remember these games is that the greatest swimmer ever cemented his status as it. And the greatest sprinter, the greatest runner and the greatest event of the Olympics, everybody tried to unseat him and it wasn't going to happen. And in the middle of that, we had, a good 4 or 5 minutes on the Canadians. And the Canadian story was magnificent in these games, wasn't it?
Yep.
We had a 16-year-old kid, Penny Oleksiak, who, out of nowhere, I mean, Penny came to these Olympics with the goal of setting a personal best. Well, she won a gold medal, and she won 2 bronze medals, and she won a silver medal. And Kelly became the most decorated summer Olympian in one games ever for the country. And she's 16, and the Olympic swim coach is saying, we believe she can be the most decorated Canadian summer Olympic athlete ever.
Yeah.
You're saying, well, hold on a minute. What about Andre DeGrasse? He's only 21. These are his first Olympics. 4 years ago, Andre was playing high school basketball, and the only reason he started to run was because their high school program folded up shop. And here comes DeGrasse, who wins 3 medals in all 3 events.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the genesis of it, of let's highlight what these Canadians have done, but also put our women on display here. 16 of the 22 medals that the Canadians won came from the women, and girl power became a big theme here.
I'm wondering about Penny as she gets off that plane and gets back to normal life. I'm wondering about endorsements and that sort of thing. I wonder if she's going to be replacing, to put it frankly, Eugenie Bouchard's, she was going to be the one that's going to endorse everything. Maybe that's going to change now. I imagine, you know, the Pinties and McCain's and companies like that will be lining up to have her represent them.
Yeah, here's the interesting part of the Alexiak story is that, and I want to word this carefully, because what will make her marketable are her medals, no question, but her name too. You know, Canadians now across the country know who Penny is.
Yep.
And so you can market the name as much as you can market the athlete and everything that comes with it. And if you invest into Alexiak now as a 16-year-old, you can really dial into a lot of different demographics, which makes her, you know, which makes her safe. The best part of the Penny story to me, though, guys, is that we were reminded throughout these games that she's just a teenager. Like yesterday, she was named the flag bearer for the Canadian Olympic team, and they brought and she says, "Hey, guys," and somebody asked her about it, and she says, "Well, I'm super honored." And then I asked her, "Penny, what have you been doing for the last week?" And she said, "Well, sleeping a lot,
eating junk food,
hanging out with my friends, going to McDonald's." You know, her mom says she likes eating donuts, so she'll probably end up eating a lot more donuts. And, you know, her mom said she's just a kid. Like, she's going to want to go to the prom. She's going to want to hang out with her friends. So we're getting to know this kid at the same time that she's getting to know herself, which can be a negative thing and it can be a positive thing. It's just going to be a matter. What's in Alexiak's favor is her brother plays in the NHL. Her older sister is an NCAA rower. And Penny said, "Hey, they're going to put me in my place. Nothing's going to change at home because I'm the brunt of everything. I'm the baby in the family." So she's going to get used and abused by her brothers and sisters, just like any other Canadian who's the youngest in the family would.
Well, it's going to be neat, Arash, because Canadians are going to see her grow up. She's going to grow up publicly, right? And that, you know, you haven't seen, you always think of, you know, President Obama's daughters. We got to see them grow up or that sort of thing. You get to see that a little bit. But it's rare that you see an athlete that's so young. It's like, she's going to be a completely different person in Tokyo. She'll be a 20-year-old woman, right? It'll be neat to see.
Right. And really, Kelly, we're going to see her in Tokyo 2020. And then you have to figure it'll be in 2024. This is the scary part. If she continues on this trajectory, and who knows what's going to happen between now and then in her personal life, in her professional life, in her sporting life, but she probably won't even hit her full stride until 2024.
Mm-hmm.
90 days ago, Penny Alexiak was 15. So if she's going to be 24 in 2024, that's your wheelhouse. That's two games from now, which is why you see and you hear the potential of what could be. And she's in no rush. Her family's in no rush. And quite frankly, Swim Canada's in no rush. And I guess what kind of makes this intriguing too is how many more pennies could there be lurking? How many more pennies could there be in the pipeline that we don't even know about?
Or are going to start because they saw this or decide that's what they want to do. And that's, I think that's really a legacy of the games. If you can get that, that is awesome.
Yeah, and if you were an 8 or 9 year old girl and during London 2012, and Christine Sinclair or Melissa Tancredi or one of those players did something for you, what about 2024 then? What about, 8 years from now then? Are we going to have the legacy of the women's soccer team then kind of come to fruition? What about this women's rugby sevens team that so many people now want to run and hit like Jen Kish did? Or what about this basketball team and Kia Nurse? It's really interesting now seeing the growth of this, of some young athletes. You know, was there a kid sitting at home and watched Derek Drouin just, you know, fly and say, "I want to jump. I saw this guy win a gold. I want to go jump." I don't know. I think there's something really cool about that, and that's what makes the Olympics so unique.
with Arash Badani in Rio. Just a couple more for you before we say goodbye to you, and I know you leave on a red eye tomorrow. But just tell me from a strictly selfish perspective, because I am a self-professed Olympic stork. I've never been able to go to one before. So let me live vicariously through you for a second. You were in the venues for and saw these guys partake, the two greatest of all time. What's more electric, being in that swimming venue while Phelps is in the pool, or being at Olympic Stadium when Usain Bolt is on the track, because you were there for both?
Yeah, and I'll tell you this. Guys, I'm very lucky. Like, I've done some Olympics, and I've done some Super Bowls and NBA Finals, World Series, the rest. There is nothing. There is nothing like the 4x100 relay final at an Olympic Games. There are 90,000 people who go deathly silent. And then the gun goes off and the roar, this primal roar that begins. And by the time Bolt gets the baton at the end, it doesn't matter if they're behind or if they're ahead. They were ahead in London and they were behind here. And this human being, allegedly, shoots out of a cannon. When he gets that baton, he's a human video game. He's a live cheat code. He's the turbo button on, you know, going nuts. And he just blows by everybody. And the energy and the electricity in the building and watching this guy do what he does is a sight to behold. On TV, it looks great. But in person, like, I mean, it's something else. And that to me was the moment of London 2012 that got me, and again this time around, that I am better than all of your betters. I am better than your better could even dream of being. And I'm going to continue to do it at the age of 30 and leave you in my dust.
Yeah.
It was a privilege to watch him in his Olympic career and to do triple gold three times is insane.
Finally, is
defies logic.
It does, and I mean, you're right. I mean, it does look insane on television when you see him break away from everybody else. I can't even imagine what it would be like watching that in person. Final question: you got to see a ton, and you kind of had the unique experience. You weren't on one sport; you were chasing the medals around. Just your takeaways, whether it be from a Canadian perspective, from an international perspective. You just talked about Bolt, but what are some of the other things that you'll remember and will stick with you for years to come from 2016?
I think there are a couple things. One is the arrival of DeGrasse, because there's no event bigger than the 100. And I know for Canadians, it's tough to even mention Ben Johnson. But when I was a kid, there was nothing bigger than Ben versus Carl. And then when Johnson tested positive, just the pall across the country of how could this happen? How could he do this? And how Donovan Bailey, 8 years later, just kind of, we finally were able to get up from that. We finally scraped ourselves up off the mat. And now DeGrasse has his sights on Donovan Bailey's national record. DeGrasse has his sights on gold in Tokyo. DeGrasse has his sights on trying to win triple gold. And here you have, again, a kid that 4 years ago had never even entered starting blocks in track and field. And we got the first glimpse of what he could be. And guys, if he turns into the star that many believe he can, I mean, Andre told me, I don't even know how to run yet. So once he learns how to run, what could this be and how big of a star could he become? And is he the heir apparent to Usain Bolt? Because if the next guy after Bolt is a Canadian, then there will not be a bigger global star than Andre DeGrasse. Roger Federer is going away. And Usain Bolt's going away. And literally, you know, LeBron James in 4 years, or definitely in 8 years, won't be around. We may very well, if DeGrasse continues on this trajectory, the biggest global star may very well be a Canadian. Now, it's a lot to ask of him, but he's comfortable in his own skin, and he wants it. So if it happens, we could be on the cusp of something pretty special.
There's Arash Madani. He covered the 2016 Rio Olympic Games through its entirety for Sportsnet, and his final day in Rio, looking back on what was, it really was a great Olympic tournament. It really was, from afar, it sure did seem to go off without a hitch. Now, I'm not naive enough to believe everything was perfect. I also have read plenty about what the lasting negative impact could be of the games on Brazil as a whole. But in terms of what we were worried about protests, about security, about Zika virus, about dirty water, about all that type of stuff, once the Olympics began, it was all about the sports. And the Canadian story was great. Some of the other stories were inspiring. We had so many moments that we'll remember forever from the 2016 Rio Olympic Games. And that's how, you know, I think a lot of people are going to remember it. Arash joined us down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Enjoy flame-grilled burgers paired with local craft beer. Visit their new location, now open in East Hill, 17th Avenue Southeast, and Stony Trail. For Kelly Kirshen, our outstanding producer, Matty Rose, my name is Pat Steinberg. Primetime Sports is around the corner. We'll be back with the big show tomorrow at 1 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.